Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Welcome to our call today. This is Stephen Oliver, CEO of the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. I am honored to be joined with a longtime friend of mine, Greg. We've probably been friends for, must be at least 26 years. Yeah. Hanshi Greg Tierney from Syracuse, New York. And Greg, let's introduce you to our audience and give them a little bit of a background. First of all, you first opened your school there in the Syracuse area. What year?
1969.
So you actually, that was the year I started martial arts. So you actually opened your first school in 1969. What year did you start training in martial arts?
I started training around 1958, and I went to my first legitimate organized school in 1964. That was my first instructor. Yes.
Tell them a little bit about your martial arts background and training and what you did then and what you do now.
Well, I started out in boxing, and then I went to my first formal school was a Shorinru school. And from there, I went into the Goju system. I proceeded to train in judo and then followed by my jiu-jitsu training. But I think the core of my system now consists of a combination of Shorinru and Goju-ryu, which I achieved under my main instructor, who was Grandmaster Frank Van Lenten.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And you're of course, now a 10th degree Grandmaster instructor. I've been at this for many years, as they already get the sense of. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the evolution of your school there in Syracuse. Of course, you have two now, but give us a little bit of the evolution, how it came to develop.
Well, I started out teaching in 1965 for my instructor, who at the time was Peter Masacchio. And I taught for him from 1965 until around 1969 when I left to open up my own school. The beauty of it was that I had quite a hands-on apprenticeship. The thing that would contradict what is common today was that I was not being paid. In fact, back in those days, it was a privilege to have the honor to teach for your instructor. So in 69, I opened up my first school, and I taught out of a Catholic Charities auditorium. I started my first class. I had 180 students, and I was informed that I couldn't turn them away. So I proceeded to kind of wash them out with unbelievably strenuous exercising classes and sparring classes. And when I got done, I was down to a hardcore 45 to 50 students. Out of that group emerged people like Vince Grace, Denny Davis, Sam Roberts, Ronnie Jones, a lot of the names that people might be familiar with in the old days and on the competition circuit. I went to my first full-time leased location in 1973, and from there I proceeded to expand. At one point I changed to the Purple Dragons. We were Purple Dragons for about 10 years, created quite a name on the tournament circuit. My wife, Judy Madoffrey Tierney, was one of the top fighters, forms, and weapons competitors. At one point in Region 11 in Karate Illustrated, we had about six people in the top 10, including myself when I came out of retirement to do weapons in kata. I fought as a black belt from 1966 until I retired from fighting in 1977. So many years on the tournament circuit, I was the head director for the Empire Open Karate Championships here in Syracuse from 1972. And then in 1980, believe it was 80 or 81, you and I think that's when we met through EFC with Mr. Kokinos down in Maryland. And that changed everything. Yes.
It could well have been. I opened my schools here in Denver in 83, and of course EFC formed as an outside billing company. I believe it was in 82.
Yes.
And so it was right there, early 80s. Yes. Tell us how that changed your school.
Well, the first thing that we had to adjust to was the fact that being in business was a total renaissance for us in terms of, you know, what we thought of a martial arts school. We never thought of it as a business. It was always something we enjoyed doing. If we made money, it was great, but we never really, really looked at it as if it was something that we could make become wealthy doing, until Mr.
Yeah.
Kokinos brought us to the realization that if we did it correctly, we could in fact become what is known nowadays as the martial arts millionaires. You
yep.
and I know that we were the pioneers in that area, and it got to the point where we started to implement very good, strong business concepts that, in fact, were so it was almost impossible to realize the development of some of the things that he came up with: the Black Belt Club membership, the student creed, monthly tuitions, no cash outs. It was amazing. But to get to that point, and then I think the biggest impact that I had was when he told us that it wasn't worth it for us to continue to promote or give large tournaments, and it was wasting a lot of time and money putting our efforts in trophies as opposed to student service. I think that's when it really began to hit for me.
Yeah, and there's an interesting juxtaposition there. And, of course, you had been actively involved in competition and promotions, and so had I. Ran a big tournament for about 10 years. But the unfortunate reality of promoting a tournament is that the time and energy suck it takes and the opportunity cost is a real difficult balance.
Yeah.
Most people we know that promote a tournament, you know, they might take a $30,000 a month school and make it a $10,000 school for 3 months in order to run a tournament and do a $10,000 net profit. And so it's certainly not the right direction to be moving on that for most people.
No. And, you know, if you look at it today, the whole landscape has changed. Tournaments are still there, but they just don't – they're not like they used to be. I mean, there's so many tournaments now, so many – they've changed the titles from grand champion to world champion, and there's so many of them. It's hard to keep track of nowadays. So
yeah,
we have learned
absolutely.
That winning trophies does not draw students. We've learned that what draws students is what can you do for them. They're looking to improve their lifestyle, looking to learn martial arts for reasons that go far beyond winning a trophy. And until we got to the point where we could do that effectively, it was a hard transition to make, but making that transition was worth it.
Absolutely. You know, there are still martial arts school owners who think that the school owners that are highly profitable, making lots of money, have somehow watered down their curriculum or bastardized what they're doing. Well, what's your perspective on that? Obviously, you come from a very hardcore background, hardcore training background, and tournament background. Do you have to water down and negate the quality in order to have lots of students?
Absolutely not. And you know, because you've been around me long enough to see how I had restructured my belt system, my curriculum, the whole nine yards. What happens is, in some systems, and by doing that, you totally negate the effectiveness and the legitimacy of the system. What I had learned to do over the years, as Mr. Kokinos used to teach us, was belt them and tip them to death. I come from a traditional Shorinru Goju background where we have a 10-Q system. And what I have done is I've realistically taken that system and broken it down to several smaller categories. So if you were to look at what I'm doing today, for instance, my junior black belt is equivalent to an adult green belt. My teen black belt is equivalent to an adult brown belt. And I've broken the system down and the belts down. I have multiple belts and multiple tips. You know, nobody cares about the belt until it becomes a black belt. And by doing it the way I've done it, I've not only been able to maintain the integrity of my system, I've actually improved on it because we're promoting and grading at smaller increments, which slows the whole process down and in turn meets the qualifications of time and grade to black belt, which in our system is 3 to 6 years. So the average person going to full black belt in my system is about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. And a couple of things you said, just to reiterate, is the important thing is to have small chunks of progress. So to be having a promotion, a reward, a stripe, a belt, you know, I like to think of it just like high school or college. You're doing a midterm and a final. That's kind of the longest period of time when they should having some sense of progress. And obviously, the younger they are, the more stripes and tips and patches and things they need to keep them engaged at the early stages.
Well, here's another side note on that, was that it really you know, enhanced our retention, because when people are seeing progress, they're going to stay with the program, and if they stay with the program, then they're going to advance, and in advancing, they're going to renew. So that's been tremendous as in enhancing our RQ.
Well, and you look at, you know, the most financially successful schools, you know, in the world. And among our mutual friends, Keith Hafner, Steve LaValle, Dave Kovar, Tiger Shulman in New York, Master Clark in Jacksonville. And I think what you find is the more financially successful the organization becomes, the higher quality their black belts become, because they have more and more resources to devote, more and more opportunity to expand and to give a higher level of focus and quality on what they're doing. It's the opposite of watering it down. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. And not only that, but, you know, we have a philosophy that you really don't start to learn Goju or Shorinru until you get to be a black belt. So emphasizing that, it's not, you know, how many times have you heard, well, as soon as I get my black belt, I'm going to quit. You know, I equate that to going to law school, graduating from law school, and saying, well, you know what? I'm a lawyer now. No, you're not a lawyer until you pass the bar. Mm-hmm. And so the bar is to get to be third or fourth degree black belt. Now what you're doing is you're enhancing your retention on the upper end, which in turn just makes your school that much more solid.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and the other thing that I see in the industry right now, and last few months, as you know, I've probably spoken to 165 or 70 school owners and talked personally one-on-one with maybe 125 or 30, and the vast majority of those who are financially unsuccessful, I think they just don't have a perspective of what's doable in the industry, and oftentimes real low goals and expectations for themselves. It gives them some thoughts on that. I mean, you've had a very financially successful school for well over 30 years now. So what is doable in the industry? What would you tell them from what their expectations should be?
Well, the first thing I would emphasize is that if you're in it for the money, find something else to do. Because if that's your only purpose for teaching martial arts, you're not going to be successful. You have to have the passion. You have to have the love. You have to be dedicated. And, you know, you got to work twice as hard. So it's not an easy task to begin with. That being said, there's so much information available now. You and I know we came up and we learned as we went along. The people today have an opportunity to be in contact not only with great organizations, such as your organization, EFC, all the groups that are out there. The knowledge and the experience is there. I mean, you don't even have – all you got to do is get on board and start to implement the practices that have been proven to be successful. But that being said, you know how it goes. Some people think, well, I'm going to just do part of this or I'm just going to do part of that, and they end up with partial success. The only way to be successful is to do it the right way. That being said, I think that the biggest mistake that most people make is they want to emphasize their accolades. I'm a 10th degree black belt. I've won multiple world championships. I've done this, I've done that. Nobody cares about that. When people come in and they start to inquire about your program, the first thing that should come out of your mouth is, what are you looking for? What is it you expect to achieve through your martial arts training? And then from there, proceed to provide them with their needs, not to talk about who you are, what you've done. They're not calling you because of that. They're calling you because they want something that's going to enhance their lives and give them a better lifestyle. And when you learn that, that formula alone is going to be the first step towards major success. And anybody of the pre-mentioned successful martial arts school owners, I would venture, would say the same thing, that's the level of mentality that you have to go into in order to be a successful martial arts school owner. The other thing that I think people need to be aware of is that they think that this is an easy business. I got to tell you, and you know for yourself, that this is one of the toughest businesses that anybody could ever elect to get involved in. So if you don't have the passion, the love, and the desire to do it, then you're not going to be successful.
Yeah. And from what you said a minute ago, one of my quotes I remember Keith had, which I liked, was most martial artists need to love their students more and love their particular martial art a little less.
Yeah.
And it's that transition you make as an educator away from being an athlete. And
right.
as you mentioned accolades, again, I've looked at probably 140 martial arts school owner websites, and they want to all talk about what rank they are and how many trophies they've won and who's, you know, all that stuff. But what you know, for the kids market, I picture soccer mom and a Range Rover with a 7-year-old daughter. What's she interested in? Well, what
she
kind of environment? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. She wants to know what she can do to increase the focus, the discipline for her child, how she can bully-proof that child, how she can make sure that that child's going to be physically fit, he's not going to be obese, he's going to have the focus and concentration to be successful in school. And those are the attributes that martial arts, the intangibles that martial arts provide, that no other activity can provide. And if you as a school owner can convey that in a way that are going to talk about the B's and V's, the values and the benefits of martial arts, then you're on the right track. And that's exactly what people have to learn if they want to be in this business for any period of time.
You bet. And it's all about getting out of our mindset as martial artists and getting into the mindset of the prospective student and the prospective parent coming in the front door.
Yeah.
And how they're going to look at this thing and whether they're going to be comfortable in the environment and whether what we're offering them is something that, you know, they see as a life value.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how would you rate the value for the average parent of learning Goju or Shorinryu versus life skills and confidence and immunity to negative peer pressure? How do they weigh those two things?
Well, if I were to ask a parent, you know, which style do you think is better, Goju or Shorinru? They'd look at me like, you know, what the hell are you talking about, right? But when you start talking about values and benefits that they can relate to, focus, discipline, balance, concentration, self-confidence, now you're talking a whole different level of service. The other thing that we have to be aware of is that when people come to our doors, our competition isn't necessarily the other school on the other side of town. Our competition may be soccer, lacrosse. It may be football, basketball, gymnastics, dance. That's what they're trying to make the choices of, because they don't know the difference between Goju-Ryu and Taekwondo. So we've got to be aware of that. So when they come into our school, we can't overemphasize, you know, what we do or, you know, our accolades. We want to, again, get back to the main purpose why they're even walking in the door or calling our phone, and as to let them know what we can do for them. And until we get to that point, and it's hard because we put a lot of time and effort in winning trophies and tournaments and becoming, you know, a 6th, 7th, 8th degree black belt, we got to understand that they'd have no idea of what that really means.
Yeah, nor frankly in the early stages do they care. We educate our students to care because it's part of their lineage and so forth. But certainly to market to them, to bring them in the school and to have them come through and be enrolled instead of go to black belt, none of that stuff really is important to them.
No. But the other thing is when they walk through that door, that facility needs to be immaculate. It's got to be clean. It's got to be professional. And you as an instructor have to be professional. And that's the other thing, because when they walk into, you know, a professional facility, they expect that's what they're going to be getting. And especially if you're charging a valid price for your service, it should be indicated, you should show value in your facility, in your professionalism, in your classroom, and in your service.
And you bring up something that's, again, controversial among martial arts school owners. Again, out of that big group I talked to, all the ones that were financially failing were charging less than $100 a month.
Wow.
And the ones that were financially successful were somewhere between $150 a month and I think at a high end, $497 a month. What would you tell school owners about how to think about creating the value for their program in order to have a tuition that's a reasonable price point?
Well, I think that, first of all, you cannot be afraid to charge what it's really worth. And that is, like you said, between $150 to up to $400 a month. The problem that we have is that we don't believe that our service has that value. So we tend to naturally feel that charging less will get more students, but in fact, we are negating ourselves from the higher income and quality students that we should be getting from that perspective. The other perspective is that I really feel that anybody who comes into my school, the value of what I'm teaching them is $300 to $400 easily worth of service and betterment and helping them to become a better person. But the problem is that we all know that, but if we don't believe it, then we have a problem, you know, conveying it to people. You know, if somebody says, well, that's very expensive, and you say to them, but the value of what you're getting is you can't put a price tag on it, and then move on. You have to be able to believe it. If you don't believe it, then you're never going to really charge what you should be charging. And then in that process, it becomes self-destructive, and that's why these guys are not succeeding.
Yeah. Well, what would you say about someone who says, well, yeah, but all of the other schools in my area are only charging X, and I'm already the highest in my area. How can I possibly I know what I tell them. What would you tell them when they think that way?
I would tell them that why would you want to be like that? I want to be the highest price if I can be, because I feel I have more to give. My service is more valuable. You know, it's like buying a car. They all have wheels. They all have steering wheels, engines, doors. They got speedometers. They got the whole nine yards. But, you know, I think I'd feel better driving that Porsche than I would the Volkswagen. They're both from Germany. They're both very nice cars. But the Porsche, to me, would be a much better deal as far as I'm concerned. You know, why aren't all cars the same? Why aren't all cars Volkswagens or Hyundais? Why are there Mercedes and Porsches and, you know, Jaguars? Because there's a market for it. And there's a market for it because they give more value in their vehicles than others. And there's a market for that. Martial arts is no different. The people that we are providing the service for are the same people who buy cars. If you attract by a lower end clientele because your prices are low, that's who you're going to get. On the other hand, if you project yourself as being the Mercedes-Benz in your business, then that's the clientele you're going to get. And, you know, as we call it, the Dream 100s, those are the people that you know. You got great customers, and you got dedicated students.
Right, right. Well, and you said a couple things buried in there. Let's make sure they don't miss it. Higher quality students come from higher quality people who come from the people who are willing to pay a higher tuition point.
Exactly.
And number two is you can never, in our industry, you can't lower your price and accelerate your volume. The two things aren't related. You either fill your school up with broke people who tend to be, you know, higher maintenance and higher turnover and, you know, less follow through, or you fill your school up with quality people. And again, we're not talking about they have to be millionaires, but, you know, I found if somebody is paying $397 a month for tuition, they take it a lot more seriously than somebody's paying $75 a month for tuition, even if it's the same person.
Well, you said something many years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but I recall at one of our board meetings, you said something to the effect, you would rather have 50 people paying you $200 a month than 100 people paying you $99 a month.
Yep.
And it made perfect sense to me then, and that's when I started to change my thinking. And you know as well as I do, you get people out there say, well, you know, we don't want to raise our tuition. But invariably, every time we've raised our tuition, our enrollment has gone up.
Yep.
And that's a phenomenon. I still haven't figured it out, but if it ain't broke, I'm not going to try and fix it.
You know, there's a great book called Influence, Science, and Practice. You've probably seen it or read it by Cialdini.
Yes.
And the opening paragraph of that book is a story of, and it's unrelated to us, but it's a gift shop that had turquoise, and the owner had told an employee to cut the price in half to get rid of it because they couldn't give it away, and the employee misread the note and doubled the price, and it all sold out within a few days.
Yes, and, I remember that. Yep.
And the principle is absent other criteria, price determines perception of value.
Exactly.
And we're a very difficult thing for somebody to compare apples and oranges. And of course, most of our prospective students never do. Our estimate at the recent meeting was maybe 3% of prospective students ever look at another school.
Mm-hmm.
They either decide they want to do what we're doing or not, and then they decide whether they can afford it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really price shop. That's a very unusual phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back to what we mentioned earlier in terms of the reputation of the school, the reputation of the instructor, A lot of people think that that's not relevant. You know, I recently was awarded with a resolution through the New York State Senate and the New York State Assembly. They did a resolution, and it is on the record of my accomplishments in the martial arts. Now, I don't say that only to make this point. The general public has no idea what the credibility of that really, where it comes from. The fact that the legislation in the assembly recognizes a martial arts instructor kind of makes it easy for them to make a decision on where they should go. And in my case, because I've been around so long and because I've been doing so much in my community, that's the kind of recognition that I get. When people call me, you know, half of the battle of credibility has been already established through other means. And I think it's important to make the point that as a martial arts instructor, if you have a school, you need to get out into the community. You need to do things that are going to draw recognition to you that has nothing to do with you making money or promoting your school, but just promoting well-being and discipline, and in a lot of our cases now, bully-proofing, to become a service-oriented person in your community. It's only going to add to your credibility and to the value of your program. And a lot of guys don't realize that. You know, well, I don't have time to do this. I don't have the time to do that. You know, we have an intramural tournament coming up pretty soon. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but you know who Alec Baldwin is, right?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, well, his mother is Carol Baldwin. She, in fact, is my wife's mother was married to her brother. So we're distant. We're kind of closely related here. But Carol Baldwin heads up the Carol Baldwin Cancer Research Fund. And we're doing a kickathon with our students and another school, Northeast Karate, who's headed up by Tisha and Ed Trotman, who are students of mine. And we're raising money for the Carol Baldwin Cancer Research Fund. Now, to me, I'm in it not for the publicity as much as I have a special relationship to that because my mother passed away from breast cancer. We are doing this because this lady has done an awful lot in research for breast cancer that have helped a lot of ladies survive this terrible disease. There are so many things that we can get involved in and do it for all the right reasons that will just take us to a whole new level. Because when people look at us and say, well, they're karate guys and they break boards and bricks, well, that degrades us, you know, quite a bit. But by doing these other things, it just brings us to the level that people can relate to that gives us a kind of credibility that we need to be good martial arts instructors.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, before we run out of time, let's give everyone some practical implementation steps here. You have two locations, one of them building that you own, about 7,000 square feet. Another one you're getting ready to relocate into, what was it, 4,600 square feet?
Yes.
And in the main location, what kind of active count have you run at peak and perhaps now? What kind of revenue is attached to that?
Well, at peak, we were up over 400, close to 500 students. Obviously, with the recession and things going the way they have been going, our active count right now is somewhere between 300 and 325.
And you're certainly in an area that got hard hit.
Yes, we got hit very hard. All of the major industrial plants closed. But this happened before the economy went down. We were experiencing this 10 years ago. And so what happened in a lot of the people that were in factories and some of the businesses that closed down in our area, they went out and opened up their own businesses. So our economy is somewhat stabilized, as opposed to, you know, like a General Motors that closes down and, you know, half the population is out of work. We didn't experience it to that degree. But we did experience it to the degree where, yes, my enrollment went down, and we had to kind of freeze our tuitions at that point because we thought we might become victims. But we've done well to hang in there. We've had three or four schools open up in our area that they have shut down. And recently we had another affiliate school open up. Well, when I say affiliate, they were my students that opened up. But, you know, we've been able to hang in there, and actually we're starting to see it turn up right now. The enrollments are increasing. We've raised our tuition again, and we seem to be on an upward spiral. But that's just what we're experiencing in our area. As far as our main location, we teach our karate. We have a Thai kickboxing program, and we also have an Israeli combat program, because nowadays the adults are not as receptive to the uniforms, the sparring, and the kata, but they want to work out, and they want the self-defense, and they want the fitness. So we've learned to adjust so that we can accommodate the market as it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's give them some thoughts. If you've obviously maintained extremely good student retention, extremely good graduation rates to black belt for, again, well over 30 years. What are some key elements for instructor training and how you manage the school to maintain both that level of rapport plus a high quality classroom? What would you say are some of the key elements for developing that?
Well, I would say the first thing you have to do is you have to make sure that your curriculum is in place, that you have it systemized, you have it broken down, so that it's going to be easy to implement and to follow. Then you have to have the instructors constantly being trained so as to convey that to the students. We have attendance. We got to keep track of attendance. We got to keep track of promotions. We got to make sure that nobody gets overlooked or falling through the cracks. If the students are not attending classes, we've got to make those phone calls, the DNS calls, to make sure they don't get out too far where they won't come back. I think that staff meetings are very important. Got to keep track of the statistics. Statistics will give you a true visual of where you're at. Now, a lot of these things, even we can do better. But those things have to be in place in order to make your operation run the way it should. We have found that we've increased from one staff meeting. Now we do two staff meetings, and we're going to be going to more. But communication within our staff and within our organization is vital. I don't think that our students are any different from any other students. We've got the same parents, the same students. We have all of the challenges that everybody else has. The difference may be is that we are systemized so as to make sure that any brush fires that can come up can be put out before they become a problem.
Absolutely. Let's step back to the first point you made as far as curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that most martial arts styles and most martial artists try to teach way too much stuff in the first 4 months and in the first year, and don't chunk it very well. They tend to try to give people too big a bite. What would you tell schools about that, about how you introduce a new student, how you hold them by the hand?
Well, the first thing that we do is we set up our program so as to not bunch the students together. When a student starts out in our program, we actually start them out privately, at least one to two lessons privately. And then from there, we go into a novice class. Now, our novice classes are only a half hour because I'm going to devote that full half hour to good, strong, basic techniques, stances, kicking, striking, and blocking. We're going to talk about history. We're going to talk about, you know, the system. And then from there, they graduate to our beginner class. That class runs 45 minutes. As far as the curriculum itself is concerned, we break it down. Before the old school, you had to learn X number of forms and drills in order to get a tip on the belt. We break a form down to half or even quarters and promote in smaller increments, again, so we're not overloading our students. You know, the misconception that most instructors have is if my student doesn't learn A, B, and C, then I'm not a good instructor. But in fact, it may not be you. It's the student has to be graded and taught at their level, not your level. And that's I think that's what you're alluding to. Trying to overteach will ultimately be discouraging, and they're gonna drop out.
Absolutely. And certainly, you know, I've come to think of it as the goal of the first year is to get them excited enough to want to be a black belt. Then the goal of the second year is to lay that foundation. The goal of the third year is to really hone in and create a high quality. And the goal of getting the black belt is to every year to be increasing the level of quality of the black belt, both physically, mentally, and attitudinally.
Exactly. It's funny you should say that. I was on the phone with Garland Johnson yesterday, and one of the things that we talked about was how when people come into martial arts training, usually they start and it's a hobby. And then after a certain amount of time, it becomes a habit. And then the ultimate is to make it a lifestyle. And none of those phases are going to exist unless you have a process in place that's going to help the student get to those points. So, yes, it's very important not to overteach, but at the same time, make sure that the progress is such that they can see progress and they feel positive about it.
Absolutely. And, again, it's so many small schools that are doing a poor job.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to think that the quality of their gold belts is the litmus test, rather than the quality of their black belts and the quality of their long-term students.
Right.
And they try to be rougher, tougher, meaner, nastier. You know, way too early for sure.
Yes.
With expectations that are out of reach of what the right timeline would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we know through our experience is that in order to do it right, it's got to be done right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Before we run out of time, a couple other thoughts. So what type of person are you looking for as an instructor? What should their personality be like? What should their focus be like? What's the right person to put on the floor to maintain 300-plus active students?
The first quality that I look at is that student that you have a hard time kicking them out of the dojo. They're there. They love it. They're people, persons. They're the type of person that has a personality and they want to give. That is the quality that I look for in my instructors. The person who's going to go the extra mile, the person who's going to make the extra effort, those are the people that you want to look for. And, you know, try and see if those are the ones who will be interested in going into your leadership or training instructors program. The other thing that we do is we just throw it out there and say, if you're interested, we're going to be starting our leadership program. And I've had some sleepers, people that I never dreamed would be good instructors who showed up. And I'm looking and saying, wow, I didn't know this guy was interested. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got that diamond in the rough who turns out to be an excellent instructor. So there's two ways to look at it. You got to throw it out there. It's kind of like you got to throw the net out there, and you got to bring in a lot of fish to get the big one. On the other hand, when you see that diamond in the dirt, you got to pull it out quickly and train those people.
Absolutely. You know, there was an interesting, I forget where I read it, but it was one of the airlines, perhaps it's Southwest, one of the ones who's really known for customer service. And they had a methodology for hiring their flight attendant staff. Mm-hmm. And what it was is that step three or four in the process, they'd put them all in the same room and tell them that they had a certain number of minutes to prepare, and they're going to do a little public speech on some topic. But then they'd have them all come up and do the public speech, and what they were grading was they were grading the people in the audience, not the person doing the speaking. So wow. If I was sitting on the front row, leaning in, listening intently through body language and through facial expression, encouraging you on and supporting the other people, they're the ones they wanted. If I was sitting in the back corner, taking notes, prepping myself, ignoring everything else was going on, those are the ones that got ash-canned.
Wow. Interesting.
And I thought it was interesting because as martial artists, we tend to get egocentric narcissists who are interested in trophies and how high they can kick, and then mm-hmm. think that that's the guy or the gal who should be the teacher. Where really we want empathetic, concerned that our students be better than we ever were, and take it very personally if they're not having fun and continuing to train.
Exactly. It's interesting you should say that, because there's another misconception that the students who become world champions think that they're going to be the best instructors, and they're not in most cases. It's amazing.
Yeah, in most cases it's the opposite. And I don't know why we miss it, because if you look at all other professional and amateur sports, is typically the best coaches were not the ones who were the best athletes.
No.
And frankly, in major universities, the ones that attract the most students are not the ones that have had the most celebrity themselves.
Exactly. It's amazing. Yeah. And it certainly works in other fields, and there's no reason why it doesn't work in martial arts.
You bet. Hey, let's give them 12 seconds on the, as you mentioned, the industry has changed, or the environment has changed dramatically from a marketing standpoint. Nowadays, you have text messaging and internet and email and all that kind of stuff. But what has your focus been this last year on ways to attract new students?
My focus has been on our website. We just redid it. Looking at internal marketing, as opposed to just external marketing, trying to get good people to bring good people, the VIP passes. We've been working on a lot of in-house promotions. We've had carnivals. We're doing inter-dojo tournaments. We're doing buddy days. We're doing a lot of things that are encouraging people to bring like people in, but at the same time, it's enhanced our retention. So it's a double-edged sword that's worked extremely well for us. As far as the internet is concerned, the referrals, we're using the COVAR program. We've used a couple other programs. We're systemizing everything, and we're keeping good, strong statistics. That's been the key to staying abreast of what's going on today.
Yeah, absolutely. And the important thing to maybe emphasize on the internal marketing is I believe everybody has found that the best way to get students to bring like students or like people in as students is through events. Is if you create events that they find an easy way to bring their friend down to, what we have a tendency to do is give them a pass and say, go sell your friends on taking karate. Well, that's a hard thing to do. But inviting them down to the carnival or something.
Mm-hmm. Carnival, the lightsaber show. All the things that we're doing now are geared towards, getting people interested, not directly but indirectly, and becoming part of the team.
Yeah. Well, hey, we've gone a little over our time here, but we've just scratched the surface, as I would expect with such a depth of knowledge that you have and years of experience on Shea Tierney. I really appreciate the time. If I could have your permission, I'd love to do a follow-up for everybody and really delve even deeper into the classroom.
Oh, I'd love to do it. Oh, yeah.
And the structure and so forth.
As you know, there's just so much, and it's a pleasure always. And, Stephen, you keep doing what you're doing because you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure.
So we'll ring off for today and look for some great additional material from you in the near future here. So thank you much, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. God bless you. Bye-bye.